Hello, friends. Here we are, and we are beginning with Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2, and this is the Laws of the Soul webinar commentary number 10. And this is beginning on page 109, and we are beginning with a new law. The second law, naturally, we would assume it would be connected with the second ray, which it is. The law of magnetic impulse. That's its exoteric name. We have discussed this a little before when going through a treatise on cosmic fire. And in that treatise, the laws of the soul were introduced, although there was less said about them there than in this fuller elaboration the Tibetan is given in the actual psychology book. The esoteric name is the law of polar union. The poles, the positive and negative, are united. The two are united. We might look at the Ajna Center, considering it an exemplification of the positive and negative. It's kind of a two-leaved door. One positive and one receptive. There are colors associated with the left hand, the blue and the purple, and with the right hand, the rose color and the yellow. So we're going to unite the opposites in this law, and we realize that the great second-ray sign Gemini is zodiacally that sign which unites the polar opposites, uniting the opposite zodiacal signs. And the second ray, likewise, along with its subsidiary, the fourth, is a ray which unites the opposites, contending more, I would say, with the fourth ray. The opposites contend more before their union, but when it comes to the second ray, there is a greater harmonious uniting. The symbol, too, fiery balls and a triangle, and this can be considered to be the, says the Tibetan, the true symbol of the sign Libra, and each one of these fiery balls represents one of the poles, and the Ajna Center can also be imagined here. The ray energy is second ray energy. It's manifesting energy. It brings forth out of abstraction into into the light of day. And we have a radiatory energy here. The second ray is the great radiator, as we will see when we examine the names of the second ray. It is the radiant light and radiant love. Well, much has been said about this already, but DK will say more about it, and we will analyze it and discuss it as we move along. He says it would be well to remember that we are not considering here that aspect of the second ray which is peculiarly concerned with form, because how interesting, the second ray, let's see, the second ray is really the form builder. In other words, form is really a relationship, especially a geometrical relationship, and the second ray lord is the grand or great geometrician. So form is not so much that which is obvious, the actual material construct, but that which configures the material construct. The material construct is more related to the third ray, particularly. So we're not dealing here so much with the form-building aspect of the second ray, the magnetic field which is created and which configures matter in a certain relationship and which constitutes the cohering magnetic agent in any form. That's its its form, the aspect of itself which is particularly related to the form. So the cohering, that which holds it together, that which attracts the various aspects through magnetism, we're not considering that so very much, whether in an atom, a man, or a solar system, or beyond. We are not here concerned with the relation between forms, and so much of what we call magnetic relationship, as man presently understands it, is the relationship between forms. Man currently understands relationship as the relationship between forms, because his mind, his consciousness, is focused on form, even though due, as is essentially the case, to second ray energy. So this power of attraction reaches into the world of forms, and one day it must not, as we are told in the second ray integration formula. Into the world of forms, that power must one day fail to penetrate. We are interested in the magnetic fields here, fields of coherent energy which hold the various materials, the atoms, etc., together in a certain configuration. So we are interested in the cause of what we normally call form. So we're not here concerned with the relation between forms, even though due, as is essentially the case, to second ray energy. It has to begin for us, at least on the level of form, before we can gradually work ourselves toward an inner understanding of what we really are and how we are really and subtly related in dimensions beyond the form. Nor are we occupied here with considering the relation of soul to form, either that of the one soul to the many forms, the one consciousness of all the universe to the many forms, or the one consciousness of the planet to the many planetary forms, or the one consciousness of humanity to the many human forms, or the consciousness of a monad, an incarnation, to its personality or form. Nor are we concerned with an individualized soul, or of an individualized soul to its imprisoning form. How interesting that what we are, essentially, is considered to be imprisoned in the form, not just working through it, but so that we can understand the limitations placed upon us. We have, in fact, a type of imprisonment occurring when the soul projects itself, the consciousness projects itself into these elemental fields. So he's telling us what we're not concerned with. This is not a law relating to form. How interesting. The laws we are considering are, all of them, concerned entirely with inter-soul relationship. And until we can find ourselves as a soul and find others as souls rather than be bewildered or misled by the formal presentation of those souls, then we cannot really understand or use these laws. The laws we are considering are concerned entirely with inter-soul relationship and with the synthesis underlying the forms. It's a synthesis in consciousness and in being. Well, these are subtle matters, and D.K. has told us that these laws are not easy to understand. We have to render our consciousness more and more subtle and find in every form its soul, its responsiveness, its sensitivity, its sentiency. We have to find that. We have to practice finding that, especially when we deal with other people, because this is our first concern. The proper study of mankind is man. The proper study of humanity is man, and this is our proper study. We have to learn how to get along as a kingdom, to get along in a harmonious manner, which is in line with the divine plan. So these laws are concerned with the relationships between souls as units on the higher mental plane, and also between higher forms of consciousness, which are triadal. And with the synthesis in consciousness underlying the forms, because we are one with other souls, and there is a great underlying fusion beneath the forms. I am the soul in which all souls are fused, says an ancient chant, which is used, or was used long ago at the time of taking the third degree. These laws, they govern the conscious contact existing between the many aspects of the one soul, and we are among those aspects. Every human soul, or every soul on its own plane, raising the idea, is an aspect of the one all-embracing consciousness of humanity. There is simply one knower within all of the human forms. I have expressed this phrase with care. So these laws govern the conscious contact existing between the many aspects of the one soul. And we are to learn how to communicate with each other as subtle beings, and to receive and impart energies and forces from and to each other, quite apart from the sensitivity which our form may have. We have to become sensitive to what really is a soul impression. We as a soul have to be receiving and giving soul impression to others as souls. And how do we distinguish that from our normal mental, emotional, and etheric physical sensitivity? Well, that's going to take time to work out until we can make this distinction in a practical manner. Okay, moving on here. If the cursor will just move on. The law of magnetic impulse governs the relation, all of these bipolar words, the interplay, the intercourse, the interpenetration between the seven groups of souls on the higher mental, on the higher levels of the mental plane, which constitute the first of the major form differentiations. We have to remember that that which is found upon the higher mental plane is still within the dense physical vehicle of the solar logos, and is thus considered to be form, if we confine the idea of form to the lower 21 subplanes. Of course, we can also raise that idea, and we can consider from a more cosmic perspective that the vehicles of the spiritual triad are formal as well. They are, after all, part of the cosmic etheric physical plane, and are within, in a way, the personality of the solar logos. But anyway, all of this interplay, this relationship, this interpenetration, this intercourse is going on between these psychic units, between seven groups of souls, seven groups of psychic units. The soul is the true psyche. We realize that, and we're not simply talking about the psychism of the astral body. So there is a kind of telepathy, a kind of impression, kind of impact, a kind of sending and receiving of energy which operates on that level. And are we actually aware of giving and receiving on that level? These we can only study intelligently from the angle of the seven ray groups as they compose the spiritual aspect of the human being. And When we're talking about the higher mental plane, we can use the word spiritual. When talking of the higher mental plane, the word spiritual, spiritual does apply. Sometimes we say that we can only use that word when we enter the realm of the spiritual triad, which only one small part of which is concerned with the higher mental plane. But there are seven ray groups of causal bodies, and they do communicate in their own way, a way about which probably we have a very little understanding, but at least the idea is becoming clear. So this law governs also the relationships between souls who, whilst in manifestation through form, are on rapport with each other. I mean, and this is possible for those who have causal consciousness, even whilst acting as souls in incarnation within the personality. So simply because we have a personality vehicle does not mean that we cannot be that we cannot focus consciousness upon the higher mental plane. This, after all, is what the third initiation is all about, to be a true soul and to function on the higher mental plane even whilst in the presence of the lower dimensions. So this law governs also the relationships between souls who, whilst in manifestation through form, are en rapport with each other. We have to learn how to relate to each other not as personalities, but to maintain, or first to establish and then maintain a type of causal consciousness, which means that we're actually focused on the higher mental plane, even while cognizant of the lower planes. All this simultaneously. It's not that we have to think that we can only focus on one plane at a time. We really have to have multi-dimensional consciousness, multi-dimensional focus, and this gradually we are achieving. It is a law, therefore, which concerns the interrelation of all souls within the periphery of what the Christians call the kingdom of God. And this kingdom of God, at the very least, occurs beginning with the higher mental plane. We could also say that there is a more advanced kingdom of God, which is occurring on triadal and monadic levels, but for practical purposes, even the heaven of the average believer, whether Christian or of some other religion, is not yet really in the kingdom of God. The kingdom of God begins with the third sublevel of the mental plane, and the usual heaven is found on a lower level, on the fourth sublevel. Here we may be familiar with this chart. Well, by now we should be very familiar with this chart. The fourth sublevel of the mental plane is the location or the level of vibration of Devachan, which is the heaven of the average believer. And yet the kingdom of God is above that, and some of these triadal levels are even more the true kingdom of God, because they are, for the most part, outside the dense physical vehicle of the solar logos. I suppose kingdoms of God ever rise, and so we could probably look at them from a cosmic point of view as well, and for a planetary logos, the kingdom of God would probably begin here, where the cosmic causal body, his cosmic causal body is found, and on, it's all relative, however. And we do know we want something of an improvement compared with the extent of sensitivity that we now achieve in these lower levels. So whatever really elevates our consciousness and our sense of oneness and our sense of being can be called, relatively, the kingdom of God, and that real elevation, I suppose, begins on the higher mental plane, what we call the higher mental plane, or the systemic higher mental plane. Through a right understanding of this law, man arrives at knowledge of his subjective life. And now we're going to have to look carefully at what the word subjective means, because normally when we talk about subjectivity, we're talking about average human psychology and anything that is not strictly operating on our physical level, anything etheric, anything astral, and even on the lower mental plane, we habitually call subjective. It has to do with our own personal psychological perceptions and reactions. DK has a different idea about this. He can wield power subjectively and thus work consciously in form and with form, yet holding his polarization and his consciousness in another dimension and functioning actively, quote, behind the scenes. The scenes are everything that have to do with the lower 18 subplanes. The lower 18 subplanes are the scenes. And although we habitually think that when we are emotionally focused, we are subjectively focused, what's going on the astral plane is simply a scene. And thus it is on the mental plane as well. We have to become the observer of those 18 subplanes and polarize our consciousness, take our stand, achieve our identification within the higher mental plane, where the causal body is found. So to what extent can we do this? I know we're practicing this, you know, from the very first DK told us in Letters on Occult Meditation that so often the failures in meditation arose because we failed to polarize ourselves within the causal body. Can we actually remove our identification from the habitual self, the personality, the familiar self, that which we seem constantly to observe, to a different dimension altogether and truly become the observer of the lower 18 subdimensions? We can call it the lower 18 fields in a way, subplane fields. Can we truly become the observer of these? Well, practice makes perfect, and we will be working on this, I suspect, for some lives to come. This law concerns those inner esoteric activities, which are not primarily related to form life. And form life relates to Ray 3, whose number is 9, and the 18 lower subplanes sum to 9. So that which is not related to the 3, the 9, the 18, this is what we're looking at. And to the esoteric activities of the soul with which we are slowly becoming familiar. There are a number of different states of consciousness associated with these esoteric activities of the soul. And in this chart which Keith Bailey of AUM brought together for our study, we see that spiritual discernment, group vibration, and telepathy are the very beginning of these esoteric activities. Strictly speaking, discrimination, higher clairaudience, planetary psychometry, higher clairvoyance, and all that, they're really not esoteric activities because they're still within the realm of form. So we certainly have to render our consciousness more sensitive so that what we thought was esoteric simply because it was a little more remote from our average consciousness is no longer seen as esoteric, and the whole idea of the esoteric dimensions is moved still higher and still more inward. Okay. This law is of major importance because of the fact that deity itself is on the second ray, and what do we really mean by that? You know, our solar logos, and also our planetary logos in his soul nature. Deity itself, and we're not talking about the God of the entire universe, you know. I don't know if we could actually suppose there was a ray for the God of the entire universe that would have, it would have to sum in itself all the rays. But for practical purposes, that which we called God, I mean, when Jesus, or Christ through Jesus, was praying, Our Father, which art in heaven, he was praying to our planetary logos, whose soul is expressing on the second ray, and taking it beyond that, we have our solar logos with his second ray soul and personality at this time. Second ray soul will be retained, but not the second ray personality, I suspect. Because this is a second ray solar system, certainly from the soul perspective, and maybe even ultimately from the monadic perspective. Some think that the monad of our solar logos is presently on the fourth ray, but every ray of aspect has to really be related to a higher ray and eventually be controlled by, resolved into a still higher ray, one of the three rays of aspect. So we are a great heart center in a cosmic logos with seven major solar systemic chakras in that cosmic logos, and our role is that of the second ray heart. Excuse me. This is a solar, a second ray solar system, and therefore all rays and the varying states or groupings of consciousness and all forms in or out of physical manifestation, and note there obviously can be forms out of physical manifestation, are colored and dominated by this ray, the great second ray, the indigo ray. And therefore, again, finally controlled by this law, finally, after many other types of control, we find that the various states, groupings of consciousness, forms, etc., all these are controlled by the law of magnetic impulse. So this is a very broad law and operative throughout the solar system and not simply on our planet. It's a law of related to the law of cohesion, related to the systemic law of cohesion. It brings the poles together, holds them in harmonious magnetic relationship of a subjective kind. Well, we're interested at the moment in how this may apply to the human being, to the with the human soul and the soul on its own plane. That will be our first area of interest, how it may apply to all the many groupings in the solar system. Well, eventually we can work that out. The law of magnetic impulse is in the soul realm what the law of attraction is in the world of phenomena. This is very important. So it's almost as if, in one way, the law of attraction is an aspect of the law of magnetic impulse. Of course, sometimes it can be seen as reverse when we look at the law of attraction in a great cosmic sense and not how it applies to the world of phenomena. Then it's definitely a cosmic law and greater than this soul law, the law of magnetic impulse. All these laws seem to kind of leapfrog and always have their higher archetypal meanings. They have meanings on a number of levels. The law of magnetic impulse is in the soul realm, which is not really considered the realm of form. It's certainly not the realm of dense form. It's not the realm of form ruled by the number 18. It's still form from the solar logoic perspective. But it, the law of attraction is operative in the world of phenomena within the lower 18 subplanes, and it's the attraction, in this case, between forms. Now, a higher version of the law of attraction can be considered to be cosmic, and all kinds of things that we would hardly call form at this point are attracted to each other under the law of attraction. But DK is making a distinct point that the law of magnetic impulse does not pertain to the attraction of forms, what we call forms, to each other. It is in reality the subjective aspect of that law. So that's quite a statement. When we talk about the cosmic aspect of the law of magnetic, of the law of attraction, could be called the law of magnetic impulse. It's a great cosmic law, the law of attraction, but if we want to become more subjective about what the law of attraction might mean, we could look at the cosmic versions of the law of magnetic impulse, which would be the attraction of the fields which create form, however subtle that form may be, the attraction of those fields to each other. All right, but this, you know, will be practical because it will talk to us about how we should relate to each other as souls. It is the law of attraction as it functions in the kingdom of souls. So definitely related to the law of attraction, but a higher expression of that law of attraction, higher than we normally think of when we see how forms are attracted to each other. But because it is functioning on those levels where the great heresy of separateness is not to be found, the heresy, we might say, the great mistake in perception or understanding, that's what a heresy truly is. It's not just a mental formulation, a mistaken mental formulation, as heresies were deemed to be in the last, let's say, 2,000 years. People are so zealous to make sure that others do not think in a manner different from the way they think. It's almost as if any deviation from a person's cherished type of thought is considered a kind of minor heresy. And where a religion is concerned, and many people share a certain way of thinking, then when other and larger groups share different ways of thinking, they are perceived as heresies, mistaken thoughts, and therefore dangerous and threatening to the prevailing order, the kind of order that is mandated by the accepted mode of thought of those who are in power. So the law of magnetic impulse, the subjective aspect of the law of attraction, but it's functioning in a place where only unity is perceived, and not separateness, even though there may be distinctions within unity perceived. The unity is not defiled by the perception of those distinctions. Separateness defiles the perception of unity. To perceive distinction does not. There is really no essential difference, but there are perceptual distinctions which are not fundamentally based on any true difference, though they seem to be different. So this law functions on those levels where the great heresy of separateness is not to be found. It is difficult for us with our active, discriminating minds, which, what can we say, which these minds tend to cause the illusion of separateness. The active, discriminating mind can be the slayer of the real, we have often been told. Okay, so because this law functions in an area where the great heresy of separateness does not prevail, it's rather difficult for us, in our usual mental mode, to understand its implications and its significance. It seems to be the relationship between unifying factors, a relationship between unifying factors. Souls are unifying factors. It's a relationship within unity, within a perceived oneness or unity. This law governs the soul realm. To it, the solar angels respond, should we say, having long ago been men and having worked through the soul plane, whereon now they are sacrificially focused. They don't really need to be focused on the higher mental plane. They are focused there for sacrificial purposes, investing themselves within our consciousness so that our consciousness, feeling their presence, is elevated to perceptions which would normally not be possible to us in an unaided state. So the law governs the soul realm, and to it the solar angels respond, and under its stimulation, the egoic lotuses unfold. We oftentimes may wonder, what is it that causes the unfoldment of the egoic lotus? And we understand that experience, well-handled, the proper values lived in the lower world, so that a deeper understanding is harvested from that world. All of these cause the accumulation of values which are stored in the higher mental plane, on the higher mental plane, and within the egoic lotus. But it's very interesting that, let's just say that without the law of magnetic impulse, the egoic lotuses would not unfold. So it's almost as if there is an attraction towards the world of form which helps harvest higher values. I know the Tibetan said that, well, we're not so much dealing here with the relationship of soul to form, but we have to ponder then how it is that egoic lotuses unfold, perhaps in relation to each other. The lotuses also unfold. Other lotuses or various lotuses, well, let's just call it this way, lotuses helping other lotuses. Stimulation upon the plane of soul. Stimulation between the lotuses. And a mutual facilitation, we might say. It could perhaps be best understood if it is considered, this law considered, the impulsive interplay between souls in form and out of form. Okay, so here we have the soul in incarnation relating to the soul on its own plane. So let's put it this way. The soul in incarnation relating... to the souls on the plane of soul, the higher mental plane. So there is a way of communicating then. We recognize ourselves as a soul within the personality, and we may even be on the higher mental plane, focused on the higher mental plane while in the personality. And we can relate to souls on their own plane, even whilst here apparently confined. It is the basis of egoic recognition. And what should we call this? Soul recognizing soul. Or egoic units recognizing related egoic units. It is the factor which produces reorientation in the three worlds. It is as if the reversal of the wheel may be related to this law of magnetic impulse, the magnetism from the world of soul. Let's see how we could do this. Okay, I'll give up looking for the abbreviation. World of soul. The magnetism from the world of soul acting upon the soul in incarnation. It is not soul and form, it's the world of souls drawing the soul in incarnation upward. The world of souls drawing the soul in incarnation, so to speak, upwards. And it's the cause of the magnetic rapport between a master who really is a soul and his group, which consists of souls, or the master and his disciples. We are not speaking of the formal aspects of the master or of the disciple, but of their soul nature. Okay, and just correcting those words. So just reviewing this a little bit, this law could be best understood if it's considered as the cause of, or see how we do this. The law governs this, the soul realm, and to it the solar angels respond. So it is not a law operative in the lower worlds, but it can have an effect upon the soul immersed in the lower worlds. So this law has an effect upon soul immersed in the lower worlds. So the impulsive interplay between souls in form and out of form, but it's still soul interplay, the basis of egoic recognition, not recognition of personality, but recognition of each other as soul units. Can we truly recognize ourselves egoically and, as it were, see through our formal aspects into that which is more real and provides for us a more real relationship with each other than personality relationships? It's the factor which produces reorientation in the three worlds, reorientation of the soul toward the world of souls. And I think maybe I kind of wrote that down, but let's see. The reorientation of the soul incarnation towards the world of souls. And the cause of the magnetic rapport between a master as a soul and his group as a collection of souls, or the master as a soul and his disciple as a soul. It has an occult name, and we call it the law of polar union, yet when I say to you that this implies the binding of the pairs of opposites, the fusion of the dualities and the marriage of souls, and I suppose in consciousness, the fusion of souls, I am the soul in which all souls are fused, I have uttered meaningless words, or words which, at the best, embody an ideal which is so closely tied up with material things in the mind of the aspirant, and so connected with the processes of detachment at which the disciples work so strenuously that I despair of presenting the truth as it concerns souls and soul relationships. I mean, it's clear here, the master lives and works in worlds higher than we can appreciate. So that's worth reviewing. The binding of the pairs of opposites, the fusion of the dualities, the marriage of souls, perhaps experiencing each other's energies, certainly experiencing each other's consciousness, a union in productive harmony between these units of consciousness, a greater knowing together, we might say, a greater knowing together. Well, we talk of the marriage of souls, but we do have, I think, very material ideas about what that marriage may be. And D.K. pretty well tells us that this is so, because these words are tied up with material things in the mind of the aspirant. So we're not so used to living in the world of soul, perhaps between lives, when unencumbered by any of the states of the lower 18 subplanes before re-emerging into those 18 subplanes, we will have some idea of what it really means to live as an unencumbered soul, relatively unencumbered, on the higher mental plane. And maybe in certain states of abstraction, we can withdraw sufficiently to so neutralize our usual preoccupations in the lower 18 worlds, subplanes, that we will have some idea of what it means to be a free soul. Normally, we find ourselves so tied up with the phenomena of the various subplanes, and when some of the higher of the lower subplanes are reached, being less familiar to our consciousness, we consider those spiritual states when in fact they do ensnare us in all kinds of phenomena and are act as veils upon the real soul state. Well, he says he despairs somewhat of presenting the truth, but I think as we work upon this and as we work upon achieving a well-established soul consciousness, all of his ways of describing these dimensions will be increasingly real to us, increasingly meaningful to us. Okay. Soul relationships. This is the theme that we are discussing. This law governs also the relation of the soul of a group to the soul of other groups. So unified wholes are related to each other, related in consciousness to each other through this law of magnetic impulse. So, you know, once we have identified within our own soul group and find that we are, as a group, one soul, we can approach other groups that have similarly identified, and the relationship there will be of a higher order from soul group to soul group. The formal aspects will not be of importance. It will be, we are speaking of fusions in consciousness. It governs the interplay, vital but unrealized yet as a potency, between the soul of the fourth kingdom in nature, the human kingdom, and the soul of the three subhuman kingdoms, and likewise that of the three superhuman kingdoms. You know, we are so used to relating to the formal aspects of the other kingdoms, especially the lower kingdoms, that talk of relating to the soul of the lower kingdoms can be rather meaningless, rather outside our sphere of understanding. Perhaps when we think of the higher kingdoms, we think that any relationship we have with them is more with the soul aspect or the consciousness aspect of those kingdoms. But their material structure is also so high that even relationship with their formal structure would seem a high spiritual experience. So D.K. is giving us some idea of the expansiveness of this law. He's taking it out of the individual context into the group context, into the kingdom context, several contexts. Are being presented, the individual, the group, the kingdom, and probably the planetary, and later solar systemic, I suspect. Owing to the major part which humanity has to play in the great scheme or plan of God, especially in this particular solar system and on this particular planet, this is the law which will be the determining law of the race. Well, that's very interesting, and the correlation that I tend to make there is that the soul ray of humanity, I'm looking for purple, and do I get to find it, perhaps? Maybe not. Well, there we go. Okay. All right. So what I was trying to say before, somewhat disconnected here from the internet, was that eventually the soul ray of humanity will be the second and not the fourth, as we can presume it to be at this time. It's as if humanity moves from a kind of a fourth-ray, fifth-ray situation, fourth-ray soul, fifth-ray personality, to a second-ray, fourth-ray situation. And then, indeed, this great second-ray law will be the determining law of the race, because humanity will be a great fusing, magnetic, binding, attractive agent within the planetary and even solar systemic ring past not, uniting the higher three kingdoms with the lower three kingdoms. So this will not, however, be the case until the majority of human beings understand something of what it means to function as a soul. And this is yet a while. I think we may have to wait until the judgment day, when at least all those on Earth will be on the path, even if many of them on the probationary path, where the understanding of the soul is by no means complete. Maybe there will be other times, perhaps in the sixth or seventh root race of this round, when will it be a majority that learns what it means to, knows what it means to function as the soul. Well, these are great cycles, and I think we cannot be certain. We just know that sometime in the indistinct future, human beings will understand what it means to function as a soul. I think a great many during the Aquarian Age will learn what that means, but we cannot be overly optimistic. There are so many billions of human beings, and progress is not that fast. Then, under obedience to this law, humanity will act as the transmitter of light, energy, and spiritual potency to the subhuman kingdom. So the true role as an intermediary will be accomplished. And humanity will constitute a channel of communication between that which is above and that which is below, such as the high destiny before the race. The fourth ray could give us some of that, of course, and the second ray particularly as the most unifying intermediary ray, the one between, it's the ray between the first and third position. It is the binding position. This is the destiny of the race, and the three higher kingdoms of nature will be united to the three lower kingdoms. Okay. Three lower kingdoms of nature through the unifying power of the fourth kingdom of nature, the human Now, this is not just the same as harmonizing, because under the fourth ray you can harmonize, but the true unification, which is coming, I think, has to operate under the second ray, which is the ray of this law. The second ray and the fourth ray, of course, are intimately related, but the second ray carries the process farther than the fourth ray does. All right, let us see further here. Just as certain human beings have, through meditation, discipline, and service, most definitely made contact with their own souls and can therefore become channels for soul expression, and so mediums, it's that Buddhic quality, it's Neptune. Neptune as the planet of mediumship, and the fourth creative hierarchy being found on the, in a way, Neptunian or fourth plane. So just as certain human beings can become channels for soul expression and mediums for the distribution into the world of soul energy, it's not into the world of soul energy, but into the world of soul energy, so men and women who are oriented to soul living in their aggregate form a group of souls en rapport with the source of spiritual supply. And this, let's say, this is the opportunity held out before the disciples of the world who are fusing into spiritual groups controlled by the soul. By the soul. By the group soul. Okay. So we have to learn how to function in this way, and we can see our function as soul-sensitive groups mediating between the spiritual worlds and distributing those energies to the elemental worlds which are in need of them in order for elevation and redemption. So such groups have, these people have as a group, and from the angle of the hierarchy established a contact and are in touch with the world of spiritual realities, and these occur on the triadal planes and planes above. Just as the individual disciple stabilizes this contact and learns to make rapid alignment, and then, and only then, can come into touch with the master of his group, and we might say this is occurring, you know, via the soul. We do not really approach the master as a personality. We have to elevate our consciousness into the realm of soul before the master can truly be approached. And before we can intelligently respond to the plan, we might say, as a soul, so does this group of aligned souls come into contact with certain greater lives and forces of light, such as the Christ and the Buddha. It's almost as if these great beings have to be approached largely in group formation. The aggregated aspiration, consecration, and intelligent devotion of the group carries the individuals of which it is composed to greater heights than would be possible alone. The group is faster, and so much more power, elevatory power, can be added through the agency of the group to which the disciple belongs. Elevatory. Okay. The group stimulation and the united effort sweep the entire group to an intensity of realization that would otherwise be impossible. And here is the great advantage of meditative work within groups. And especially at high points such as the full moons and the great spiritual festivals. We are raised higher than otherwise might be possible, so let us definitely affiliate magnetically with each other as souls and rise towards higher stimulation from such great beings as the Buddha and the Christ and beyond. Just as the law of attraction working on the physical plane brought them together as men and women in the world of phenomena into one group effort, so the law of magnetic impulse can begin to control them when, again as a group and only as a group, they unitedly constitute themselves a channel for service in pure self-forgetfulness. And here is the word unitedly. A great opportunity for our work in groups is here presented. We understand the advantages of group soul association and the potential for elevation which such association truly brings. Okay, friends, I think, there's a lot more to do, but I think what I will do is say that this will be the end of Laws of the Soul, webinar commentary number 10, and this is, what page is this? Okay, page 113. So we went from 109 to 113. Okay, 109 to 113. And beginning of Laws of the Soul webinar commentary number 11 from 113 onward. And I think, I think that will be good to do. So we will continue our discussion of the advantages of this association of soul units with each other as souls, forming groups of souls that have a great potential to rise in consciousness towards great stimulating sources on the cosmic etheric levels and be touched by those sources so that they can distribute these types of spiritual energies to the lower 18 subplanes. And we'll talk to you soon. We'll come back with number 11.